Hi everyone, this is Marissa Santoro with In Our Shoes, and today I am so excited for you to meet someone who has not only experienced Gutsy Leadership and has been really plugged into the work here, but is living the the principles and has been really a big supporter of making sure that our communication is clear. And that we are leading with authenticity and really stepping into our fullest potential in our careers. So please welcome Lisa Darris. Welcome, Lisa.
Hey, Marissa. Thank you so much for having me today.
Oh, you're welcome. Lisa is a communication manager at Anheuser-Busch. And so I'm just going to roll back here, Lisa, just to give everyone an idea of where we connected. You had attended one of the first live events I did for Anheuser-Busch, which was for Speaking Without Apology. That was a year or two ago, I'm not sure when. And then we reconnected, and you wanted to bring that program in again, but this time specifically for the marketing communications team. Tell us a little bit about that, what really drew you to, that initial program and where you are right now with some of the, the things that you learned and content.
Yes, well, I was really struck by the presentation that I saw you give at my company. I think it was a year or two ago. Our Women in Beer group had brought you in as a speaker to present an open format program one afternoon, and I just happened to be in the office, and I said, oh, I'll go check this out. And I remember sitting there thinking that you were very clearly articulating for me things that I had been feeling and thinking about in the workplace and in my day-to-day life for a long time. Things like our tendency to over-apologize, to not own our language, and to inadvertently present ourselves in not the way that we want to be presented. So, the messages really stuck with me. I think I had forwarded your information and the webinar link to a few peers of mine at the company, outside of the company, my sister-in-law, former coworkers, just saying like, hey, this really resonated with me. I think that like this totally puts a nice bow on a lot of the things that women in particular do in the workplace to diminish our value. And then, yes, as you said, I had continued thinking about all these lessons, and I kept seeing the things that you had mentioned pop up in the day-to-day work that I do with a pretty broad team of mostly communications professionals that I work with across the brands that I support at Anheuser-Busch. So team of maybe, 30, 40 people, all doing really tremendous work, but not selling it in the way that they should. So I was inspired to bring you in as a guest speaker to present to the group. And then since then, it's been really fun. We've been all able to kind of encourage each other, coach each other, swap kind of little victories, like, hey, I was going to say this in an email or a phone call, but I said this instead, and we can kind of high five and applaud that. So it's been fun to understand the lessons that you bring to the table and then share them with others, especially the people that I work with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I have to say that, that's really, when I hear that from lots of folks, even years later, they say, it really stuck with them. And I think that the reason why it doesn't really take long for you to kind of catch on, I really believe that it's more of the awareness. Once we're aware of ways in which, and I love how you put it when we spoke, you said that, there were all these little cues that we do, men and women. There were lots of men that were at the last events I did for Anheuser-Busch and your media agency, Pray Tell. That came up to me and said, I know there's a lot of women here, but, I resonate with a lot of this and how I diminish my cues subtly, right? With the word, I use the word, very commonly thrown around, the word just, hi, I'm just checking in, or I'm just, trying to find out when this is going to be done. And, you see a little four-little word like just, and it seems so subtle and trivial, but yet, we don't really realize how in that just one quick sentence, we're already diluting our value by almost asking for permission, right? And that's really what that program was about, asking for permission before you can trouble someone or inconvenience someone. And I know you mentioned a lot of that in the meetings that you guys have had, where you might be working all-nighters and then you finally deliver the project. That really stuck with me. Tell us a little bit about that. Like when you're working really hard and you finally deliver the product to the client, and no one's talking about it. You know, it's almost like what we're not saying. It's not what we're saying in that case. It's what we're not saying that should be said. Mm-hmm. You're sort of selling ourselves, as you mentioned. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. So I've worked in PR for about 10 years now, first at a handful of agencies and now on the brand or client side. And, you know, the funny thing about PR is that PR agencies bill hourly just like a law firm does. And each hour that you spend, you know, working on a project or landing a media story is billed time to the client. And what the client typically doesn't see is the time that you spent figuring out what we want the story to be, building relationships with the reporters that we want to take the story to, pitching that reporter, working with the reporter, saying, hey, what do you need to make this happen? What are you interested in? Okay, can I get you this interview? Then going to your spokesperson, prepping the spokesperson, here are the messages to hit, here's not what to say, here's what to say if you get this question, here's what to say if you get that question, getting them the assets they need, the photos, the videos, any other visuals, and then actually tracking and landing that story. And then, you know, so that's hours and hours and hours that the client paid for because you worked on that story for 12 hours and then, you know, the agency billed you back. And then the email, and then the story gets sent over via email and it's like, hey, just wanted to quickly flag this story. Here it is. Goodbye. And if I'm on the receiving end of that, I just think, oh, well, this story just happens. You know, maybe I don't even need a PR agency because this just story just happened and fell into my lap, you know. Thank you for flagging this and just taking a minute out of my day to, quote, quickly flag. But what you don't understand as a person paying the bill at the end of the day and then deciding what the budget for PR should be for next year is that that story actually took hours and hours and hours and your money to place. So it's really interesting, especially when you think about, you know, PR as, you know, primarily a support function for other parts of the business and also a fairly female-dominated industry. I think that we feed off of each other a little bit in terms of our tone and attitude in, you know, wanting to defer to the people that are ultimately making the final decisions. So I think there's some of these language tics that tend to kind of travel amongst ourselves. And I don't mean to overgeneralize, but certainly I think I'm painting like a worst case scenario for everything now. But it was kind of in seeing the tips and tricks that you had presented that I was like, oh, I can see this all coming together and see where we would be in a place where things like, you know, these emails are getting sent over with like, hey, just wanted to quickly flag for things that took, you know, a ton of effort to secure.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, regardless of any project, and thank you for explaining that because I don't have a marketing background. I did not know all the little intricacies that go around, and I also didn't know they bill like law firms. So that's really important, especially if you got to tie your productivity to, you know, numbers and metrics. But one thing is, you know, regardless of what projects we're working on, you know, I like to talk a lot about, even if you're having casual conversation, there's the formal, you know, sit-down meetings where, okay, project is done. And as you, you know, just spoke of, making sure that the client and everyone involved is aware of what the, you know, what went into it. But then there's also the subtle conversations that, you know, you don't even recognize when someone's just saying, you know, so what are you up to? Or your manager is asking you for a status or, you know, leadership wants to know what initiative. You know, there's always that, you know, the backstory of what, you know, really wanting to put yourself forward in the most brightest light, but also not make everything look like, you know, you just easy breezed it overnight and you're just a whiz kid, because then that's not realistic. Then you're going to be, you know, overwhelmed with not enough resources, not enough budget. So there's that fine line, even in unofficial settings. I talk a lot about the scenario of meetings before the meetings. I don't know if that's something that resonates with you, but the meeting before the meeting is, you know, where you have an official time for a meeting, but then there's all that casual chit-chat that happens before the meeting. And I've always been a really big advocate in terms of speaking without apology to sort of use that 5 or 10 minutes to kind of get yourself in there and talk about some of the, you know, that backstory. Do you find that in the workplace environment that, you know, you guys have that opportunity? I visited two of your one location and the second with your media, but I did get a nice vibe that everyone sort of was very, hooked in and plugged in together, very laid back but casual, you know. Do you feel like speaking without apology in your environment applies even in the non-official business sense where you have to put yourself forward?
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting that when you mentioned the meeting before the meeting, I think in 2019, the meeting before the meeting is the meeting that's happening 24 hours a day over text message, over Slack, over email, over all sorts of things. I mean, we have no shortage of opportunities to be selling ourselves and our work and our teams to, you know, everyone in our companies based on, you know, all those channels. So sometimes I think it can be a little bit competitive in that we're all trying to kind of have that meeting before the meeting and get the attention of the people that we want to, because there's so many avenues to do so. So, you know, yes, I think, speaking without apology through all those channels is very important, and making sure that what you have to say is presented in, you know, the most positive light, and that you are not diminishing what you're saying by, you know, hey, can I just grab a few minutes, or sorry to bug, sorry to follow up, that sort of thing. I know in the work that I do with a company that has a ton of different geographic locations, again, the email, the text, the Slacks are just increasingly important because that FaceTime is getting harder and harder to come by. I fixate, I think, a lot on the email and text and Slack communication avenues because those are so important in the day-to-day work that I do.
That's interesting. You know, it's the first time anyone's really referred to text messages and Slack in terms of business speak. I mean, obviously we know it's there. There's also Skype. I mean, people are exchanging, but, so far people have really focused on email. So that's really intriguing. There's so much conversation going on that's not face to face. And so how do we really break through in selling ourselves when you're not front and center? You know, it's not physical, real energy that's as strong as it, you know, as it could be. You had mentioned on a call we had, which I had written down because it was really key. You had said the term boosting. It's boosting, not boasting. I really love that. I don't know if you recall saying that, but it really struck a chord with me because. I hear from so many professionals, you know, I work with people, you know, not just with corporate, you know, physicians, writers, you name it. And they all, you know, so, and these aren't just women, you know, I try not to pigeonhole this as being a woman problem because it's really not. I think that women are more finely tuned into it because, there is such a gender imbalance in some of the, things that we're experiencing in the workplace. But boosting, not boasting, really struck a chord because I talk a lot about self-promotion and genuinely, putting yourself forward. And when you said boosting, not boasting, boosting is like boosting your personal brand, boosting your value. It's a feel. Whereas boasting, you know, sounds negative. It sounds, you know, pretentious. Do you feel like that's what really is the secret to, you know, success in terms of our communication, just as long as you're boosting yourself and doing it with authenticity and not boasting? Where do you kind of see that? Because I really did love that.
Yeah, you know, that's a hard one. I hope that that's the key, and I hope that that's something that I'm able to do. It's hard, right? I think we all know those people that, you know, tend to err on the boasting side. And I think sometimes I look at them and I'm like, gosh, if only I, you know, with confidence or didn't care enough about, you know, being perceived negatively because of overly boasting, that I wish I could promote myself in a way that those people can't. But I do think that the secret sauce surely has to lie on the boosting side. I know that, you know, in the work that I do, first of all, it's all teamwork. So I don't ever feel the need to get credit for myself individually, because very little of what I do is, you know, one single person. I think, you know, that applies to a lot of people. There's a lot of group effort that goes into a lot of things. So I personally would rather, and I'm more comfortable applauding the group's efforts, and maybe I led the group. But certainly, you know, no one person is responsible for, you know, any win. So, you know, I think it's tough, and I think that, some people are better at, either boosting or boasting. But I think that most of the time, the people that were doing one or the other to, at some point can, kind of really see what's going on and see, well, this person is just boasting because they're trying to, you know, paint too good of a picture for themselves, or what do they really do on this project, versus the people that are boosting and lifting up the team. I think that that leadership speaks more volumes than boasting.
Yeah, especially if you're leading with a team mindset, right? If you're more, you know, even if you are in a leadership position, but you're always, you know, sort of taking credit, then it could easily be felt the other way, that that's not the the culture you're trying to nurture. How do you help, now that, you know, you mentioned, you know, lots of people at the company have sort of been more aware of how they're speaking, not speaking without apologies, but how do you sort of each other make each other aware of where you're diminishing your cues? Is it more like pointing it out, or just sort of correcting it and laughing it off, or you know, where do you guys, or where are you catching it in the conversation?
Yeah, there's definitely some laughing involved, which I think is good, because we can approach this as like, hey, we're all trying to be better at this. You know, let's do it together, and like, we're all going to slip up at some point. But I would say, I mean, I am pretty comfortable with the folks that I've seen go through training with you. You know, hey, like, you know, this email, like, stop, you know, stop apologizing. I just sent that note to a gal I work with very closely. She was basically apologizing for doing something that was within the day-to-day confines of her job that she is paid to do by the people that she was talking to. So I was like, hey, you know, don't apologize for doing your job. Literally what you are doing here is just working and doing the thing that you're asked to do. Why are you couching it in sorry? These people pay you to do this. Stop apologizing. Right. So with that, I think it's easy to say, you know, hey, stop apologizing for doing your job. And then I have another colleague, who's absolutely fantastic at his job, and everyone recognizes it. But he tends to overly apologize for not doing something fast enough or not having been more proactive. And I'm just like, hey, like, you're doing such a great job. You don't need to apologize if someone asks you to do something simply because you didn't have the foresight to know that, you know, they were going to ask. Or if, you know, you send me something and I need like one edit to what you did, don't apologize for not having done it in the first place. Or even worse, don't call yourself stupid for not doing that. I've seen like two or three people I work with in the last couple months, like, where they're like, oh, I'm such an idiot, or I'm so dumb, over email to several people. And I'm just like, I don't think that's doing anything for anybody. I don't feel any more positive feelings for you because you called yourself an idiot, and I don't think it's doing anything for your self-confidence. So that kind of thing really pains me to see, because I don't see anybody benefiting from that. So that's something that I wish, I feel like I need like a greeting card that says like, don't call yourself an idiot, and they need to like mail it to the person. I feel like they just try to tell them like, don't call yourself an idiot. Like, what are you doing?
Right, right. Well, and also it's a generational thing too. I mean, you know, working at Anheuser, I know you said it's, you know, like 25, 35 year old, maybe up to 40 type of age range. So, you know, that might also come into play. And you mentioned emails, and inspiring confidence in our emails. One of the things that I always noticed when I used to work in tech, especially if we were going live with a new system, let's say on a Friday night, I remember, and I would catch myself, you know, over the years I eventually stopped, but I remember I would sort of like, you know, document what everyone was doing. I was sort of making sure this one was, you know, everyone knew their role and responsibility before we went live with something. And I remember at the end of those emails, I always would end with, does this make sense? And it was a question. And in that program, I do a lot of, you know, it was a more shorter one with you guys, but in the expanded version, I do a lot of work on question tags at the end of sentences, at the end of emails. And the way I saw it and still see it is that these question tags, you know, when you sort of leave an open question, like, does this make sense, or, you know, what do you think? It's sort of, you know, almost asking to be validated, asking your work to be validated, or asking for permission, as I said earlier. And so that's just something that I caught later on, and I see it now, you know, even in emails, you know, sort of not getting that call to action at the end of it, just leaving it up to the other person or people who are on the email to kind of make that decision, or sitting on the fence, will you, if you will. Do you find question tags or that, you know, need for validation coming through at all in emails? I know you mentioned text, but when you have, like, more of an official, here's what we're going to get done type of email, do you see that showing up at all?
Oh, yeah. And I think the question tag thing is, that's certainly something that I have done. And when you think about it, I feel like putting, does this make sense at the end of your email, pretty much, like, the what that's saying about what you just said in your email is that there's a coin flip whether it's completely ludicrous and nonsensical or not. That's basically saying, mm-hmm. like, hey, did I hit the mark? Does this make sense or does it not? And it's mm-hmm. kind of throwing it back on yourself that there's a good chance that what you had just said makes no sense. And in that case, you probably didn't do your job. So why are you putting that, why are you putting mm-hmm. that flag on your own words?
Right.
That's basically admitting, like, there's a strong chance that this was just complete nonsense. So I've definitely done that in the past, and I've had to stop myself from doing it. You know, and that's both at work and in my personal life. I think I was typing something to my husband the other day, and I was like, does that make sense? And I was like, oh, backspace. I don't need to ask that.
Right.
He can tell me if it didn't make sense, but hopefully it did. You know, and as a communications yeah. professional, I especially hope that it did make sense. So, yeah, I think the right. question tags are prevalent. And, you know, a big problem. You know, I think the other, another thing that I remember from, the original presentation was, what you had talked us through about, you know, just trying to schedule a meeting. And that's so, it seems like such a trivial thing because it's something that we all do all the time every day, but it's so important, when you're asking mm-hmm. someone for your time, you know, hey, can you please, make time for me at whatever time, please. I can, you know, does that work with your schedule versus, you know, and can I quickly get 5 minutes, please, versus like, hey, we need to talk about this. I can be free at noon. Like, if that doesn't work, please suggest another time. There's such a big difference in that. And yeah. I think people respond to that really well because I think another thing that you had said in your program was that people, you know, especially executive level people, want to be led. They want to be told what to do. They want to know that the people that they are working with that are supporting them are competent, are leaders, and can help them get to where they're needing to go without needing a ton of supervision or coaching or handholding, that they're competent and professional. So I think that speaks volumes in terms of just how we're perceived. And like I said, I know I'm really fixating on the emails and other digital communications, but I think that's the world that a lot of folks live in these days, and it's certainly not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, no, and also it is a record of conversations. I mean, even to this day, I'll go back and look at emails that I said just to make sure I, you know, remember what I said. So it's actually really useful from that sense. But then if you say something asking for permission, then on the flip side, it's kind of locked in stone, isn't it? You know, asking for permission if you can have a meeting. I usually open with that one example of, you know, and for those listening, I'll just kind of walk you through the example Lisa's referencing. I give everyone in the audience sort of a little example of a meeting invite. You know, typical thing, as she said, you know, you're just making a meeting invite. And, you know, in this particular time, you're not getting a response from the key project manager or the key, you know, leader, you know, manager, executive, whoever's leading that other half of your project. It's sort of, you know, hanging out and hasn't gotten back to you, hasn't responded to emails. And you have a clear deliverable that's dependent on another project, right? Like, that doesn't happen in the real world, right? Like, everyone sort of works in a a vacuum. And so you send out a meeting invite and you're wondering, and so the initial gut instinct would be like, hey, do you have time? I'm looking to see if this works. Versus, and this is sort of what I teach, it's what I've done, is instead of sending the email and asking someone for permission if you could have the meeting, make it a calendar invite. So now, it has to go on their calendar as a tentative, right? It shows that you're action oriented. It shows that you're not going to accept no. It shows you're persistent, and it shows that you're making a statement. You're not asking a question. And the other thing that I like to, just kind of give the, participants permission to do is use your own authentic voice. So, I'm from New York. I don't know if this is a local New York thing, but I always used to tend to use the words, let's nail it down. Let's lock it in. That was just kind of my thing. And I still say it today. It's even with my kids, it's just sort of my language. And I've worked with other people, from other parts of the country or different areas of the world, and they don't use those words. They say, well, shall we? Shall we do this? And that's just sort of their thing. But, the message really is that, it's not so much that you have to use the words that, there's no, dictionary of speaking without apology words. It's using your natural voice, but making it, turning, the meetings that you want to have from an email to an invite, because that's an action. And like Lisa said, everybody wants to be led in this world. Your husband or your wife wants to be led. Your manager, your executive leader wants to be led. Your team wants to be led. I work with, people who are small business owners who have a new staff, and they're really gung-ho to get the job, done and going and working that practice like a well-oiled machine. But they're not really sure of what their responsibilities are, and nobody wants to step up. It's your responsibility as a leader, whether you're running that practice or whether you're running a department or in a function, in marketing, communication, it's your responsibility to lead them, and give them those responsibilities so that, now they're empowered, number one. Now they feel like they get your why. And ultimately, they're screaming for it. And then once that happens, you're not spoon feeding. You're not, micromanaging. A lot of times we can sort of fall into that because we feel like things aren't getting done. But if you're, as a leader, taking responsibility for what should get done, and by the way, this doesn't even mean you have to be someone's official manager. I used to do one of the things that I didn't like it at the time, I'll be completely honest, but I really built my career in financial services being a matrix manager. I didn't have a ton of people directly under me, but I had to manage a lot of people in other departments because everything rolled into tech. And, and I'm sure that happens with you, right, Lisa? Like, communications, right? Like, you're at the heart of the message. You're the story of, for people to get their brand out there. So there's a lot of matrix management that might be happening in your shoes, and that's a really difficult spot, right? Because people aren't necessarily reporting into you. They don't really have any motivation to listen to you, and you don't want to be a dictator, but at the same time, taking responsibility for getting things done, you want to how do you empower people that don't work with you or for you? It's really challenging, and so even in that situation, go ahead.
I feel like that matrix leadership you mentioned is almost, it can be harder sometimes than the direct line leadership. It's almost like having responsibility without having authority. So you are responsible for making a bunch of things happen and getting people to do the things that need to be done, but you are not given the direct line authority to actually command them. On that front, perception and authority are so important, or earned authority.
Earned authority. Yes, I love that. Earned authority. And really, how do we earn authority? Well, one of the key ways to earn anyone's respect and authority, respect really as a leader, is really to let them know your why. Why are we doing this project together? Like, what's the end game, and then sort of, mobilizing everybody to go from there. You know, but nobody, I think at the end of the day, nobody really wants to be maxed out or capped out in their role. I think that, you know, they do want to grow, but, you know, they don't want to be twiddling their thumbs and doing nothing, you know, for months on end. And that's really why we move on to different leadership positions or we move around the company, why career mobility is so encouraged within companies. I mean, I worked for a large bank, one of the largest banks in the world. I was at the, you know, top C-suite in there. And I remember that the entire bank was so pro mobility, and it was really new for me because I had really grown up on trading floors, and so this was like, wow, nobody encourages mobility in a trading firm. But there it was, and when I went into it, you know, I was there for a short while. When I looked back, I sort of stepped back. You know, that was really the key to success. When you can have an employee that's, you know, moving and rotating around a company in different functional areas, how much value, how much intellectual, you know, knowledge do they have, you know, to disseminate, you know, applying what they've learned to other areas and being an even more valuable asset to a company, not just siloed, not just sitting in one space. And so, you know, if you want, you know, getting back to speaking without apology, you know, speaking without apology is leadership. It's whether you're a parent. You know, I'm a parent, and I could tell you, if I don't speak without apology, my kids can smell weakness. They will step all over me. You know, it's not even a question. I have to speak, you know, if I'm not feeling well, I'm off my A game, I've got to pull it together, Marissa, and I've got to make sure they understand what they're supposed to do. So it really does apply everywhere in leadership, parenting, in company, in businesses, small business owner, whatever it is. But you mentioned, I do want to point out something that you said a few times here, because at the heart of all of this, of communication, of soft skills, of perception, you know, it's perception. How do we want to be perceived, right? How do you want to be perceived? If you can answer that question for yourself, you know, and by the way, perception can be tweaked. You know, who you are to a peer is not the same as, you know, who you are necessarily to your manager or you know, leading a client meeting. There's a great quote that I read from Serena Williams, I think it was a few years ago, where she said, if you look at a successful woman, you can be sure that she spent a lot of time managing other people's perceptions to get there. And I really love that because it ties right into what I'm always shouting from the rooftops on. I mean, I'll shout it till the cows come home. If you're not clear on how you want to be perceived, then why would you expect anyone else in the room to understand, you know, where you are, what you deliver, your value, right? It all ties back to you. So it's really a clarity thing. And once you can sort of lock in, right? Once you can lock into your mind, well, why am I in this meeting? You know, why, you know, what's important? Why, you know, what am I really here for and what can I deliver? How can I contribute? If you're not clear on what you're there for and what you're, you know, what you're delivering, then no one else in the room is going to be clear. And energetically, you know, I try to, I don't know if I had the chance to do it at those two programs, Lisa, but I often do these kinesiology exercises where I'll actually test, someone's arm to prove that when you're saying words, simple words like, I can't skydive or I can't run a boardroom meeting or I can't, your body, I will test someone, doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter how bigger you are, I will test them and prove through this exercise that their arm will go weak, their whole body will go weak, because they're using the simple words, I can't. If you switch it around, and the same applies, if you say, my name is, you know, Madonna, or someone that's not your name, your body will go weak. Why does our body go weak?
Interesting.
Because we're telling ourselves a lie. We're saying one thing when we're not another and we're not aligned. And so that lie, even though no one else knows it's a lie, you know, and these could be white lies, but even though no one else knows it's a lie, your body knows the truth. So what happens is our bodies actually physically weaken in the moment, and that in turn shows up as weak language, as weak communication. And you can be saying all the right things. You can be speaking, you know, without apology. But if internally you're not really clear on, you know, who you are and what you're there to, you know, deliver, then it really doesn't matter what you say. You know, words are important, words matter, but internally you have to be really clear. I don't know if I did that exercise in those two programs with you, the kinesiology demonstration, but it's really interesting. You can take a can of Coke and put it in someone in front of. I've done this. I put a can of Coke in front of someone's stomach, and they'll test weak because you know the chemicals and ingredients in that can are not as conducive to our body's health. So switching gears here, when you talk about speaking without apology, Lisa, do you ever find that, you know, you're saying all the right things or even someone else maybe on your team, where they're saying all the right things, but it still shows up as weakness in some way, shape, or form? Like you're speaking without apology, you're saying all the right things, or you're writing all the right things on email or text, but it's still somehow comes off as, you know, as weak, or maybe she's not completely, or he's not completely confident in what they're saying, tying back to energy and feeling. Do you have any?
Absolutely. You know, I think some of the things we mentioned before, you know, the scheduling the meeting or showing off, you know, results from a project or a plan. You know, I worked, you know, hours and hours in this plan, and here it is. It just happened to come together. I think one key thing that I've been trying to remind myself as a, you know, cheat sheet method is replacing the majority of my sorries with thank you. So one of the takeaways from your program, you know, instead of apologizing for being late to a meeting because you had a dentist appointment, say thank you for waiting. I had a dentist appointment, or not even explaining. Just thank you for waiting. Sorry I didn't respond to your email in time. You know, hey, it's 2019. All of us get, you know, hundreds of emails a day, a week. You know, sometimes it's just simply not possible to respond to every email, or you simply prioritized other emails on top of that one, or you prioritize other things in your life on top of cleaning out your inbox. You know, inbox zero was a big trend for a few years. Seems like people are finally coming up for air and saying, maybe that's not the end game. Maybe the end game is just having balance in my life. So instead of saying, you know, sorry, I haven't responded to your email yet, say thank you for your patience. So that's been a trick that I've been trying to keep in mind, because I think that, you know, again, in terms of how you want to be perceived, do you want to be perceived as someone who's extremely apologetic for everything, sometimes simply existing and doing their job, or do you want to be perceived as someone who, you know, is gracious and, you know, grateful to others who make their jobs easier and their day-to-days easier and just does their job? I certainly think that the latter sounds much better. So I have been trying to keep that in mind. And, you know, and that goes for work, and that just goes in general. I mentioned this to you the other day, but I had I fly Southwest Airlines quite a bit, and the way that they give you your boarding assignment is they give you a number and a letter, and then you stand in line and you board in that order. And it's funny because typically the women will come up to the people in line and say, sorry, but what number are you? Or sorry, I'm A18, what are you? And a lot of times the men will just come up and say, I'm A18. Or they'll say, what number are you? Whereas I think a lot of the women feel the need to apologize. And I'm like, well, why are you apologizing? This is the way that Southwest needs us to board. They've asked us to board this way, to organize ourselves in this manner. We don't need to apologize for any of this. You're not bothering the person who's standing there waiting to board by asking what number they are or by telling them your number. This is simply what we're expected to do. The same thing goes when you board. I typically like the window seat. If there's someone already in the aisle seat and I need them to get up, I've stopped saying, sorry, excuse me, but can you get up? Because by the person choosing to sit in the window or in the aisle seat with an empty window seat, they can assume that someone's going to come up and sit in either of the two seats next to them. So why should I apologize for having them do what was inevitable? I don't need to say sorry. Mm-hmm. I can say thank you for getting up, but I don't need to, you know, beg their forgiveness simply for wanting to sit down on the airplane that I paid for a ticket for.
Right. Oh, wow. That's such a great example. Wow. I don't fly Southwest. So I wasn't aware of that, but I want to just expand that now to the workplace, because, you know, that really, when you think about the processes and just the way things get done in businesses and how you navigate business based on, you know, sort of the ground rules, there's all this, you know, there's the interrelationships of, you know, how are we going to play together? And how are we going to communicate together? And as we're doing that, do we have to ask or seek permission? Because as you said, we're doing our job, right? You've been given this fleet assignment at Southwest. This is your number. No need to apologize. You've been given this role of responsibility. And oh, by the way, it may be taking responsibility from somebody else's plate because they couldn't handle it. Don't apologize for it. Or someone's on maternity leave. Now you've done your job and her job. And she came back and she feels devalued. That's not your responsibility. You were told to do your job. You know, we see it everywhere. We see it in working mothers. We see it in people returning back to the workforce. And we see it in men. So that's such a great example because in the larger scheme of things, it can be applied to anything we're doing. Like, how are we going to play together? This is how we operate in this environment, and I'm not going to apologize for it. And oh, by the way, you know, thank you for moving. And I really do love the dentist appointment example because I've had men tell me how they would handle that. So you're late for a dentist appointment. You miss your hands-on meeting or your daily, weekly, whatever meeting that's normally scheduled. And, you know, typically a woman will rush in and say later to her manager or to her team, I am so sorry I'm late. I missed my dentist appointment, you know, there's all this apology. Versus, and I asked a few men, and the general consensus was, a man will say, had an appointment, catch me up. You know, like, no ifs, ands, or buts, there's no reason to even explain or justify your existence or non-existence in this case. You know, and also, you know, in terms of speaking without apology, how often do we put more attention on the things we actually don't want attention on? By just talking about it over and over and over again, including our mistakes, including the fact that we missed a meeting, including the fact that we may have disagreed. Like, there's also the flip side, right? Like, there's also speaking with too much apology because you're putting attention on something that you actually want the opposite effect of focusing on. Yeah, that's
and think about how many hours, we've spent over-apologizing for trivial things like that and worrying about the people that we will have upset by being late to the meeting or by missing it. And think about if you could take all of that time and put it instead against working on a project, how much happier would your employer be or, you know, whatever entity you're working for if you got all that time back and could invest it into more productive things versus apologizing, spinning your wheels, doing nothing to benefit anybody. It's kind of madness. So I very much have been trying to keep in mind that thank you versus sorry mentality.
Oh, I love that. What I really love about that response is that you're also being in service in a sense, you know, and I focus a lot about that where we are service providers. I don't care what you do. You can weave baskets for a living. You're a service provider. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and just the simple words of, you know, thank you and, you know, just giving back and being in a place of gratefulness, you know, really showing people and it applies everywhere. If you're trying to get buy-in on a project, you know, before you talk about what you want, you know, put them front and center. Make sure that their focus and their needs are talked about, and you're coming from a place of listening before dictating and stating what you need. And that's the classic negotiation, right? The art of the deal. I hate to reference it, but it really does apply everywhere. And in coming from a place of service and making sure that everyone does feel included. There's a lot of programs out in the world, you know, in companies and businesses that make diversity and inclusion a focal point, and it's important. But, you know, aside from diversity, it's just basic inclusion. You know, having a perception of who's not being included in the room and making sure as leaders, right, as someone at your level, Lisa, you know, just sort of honing in. And normally I would, you know, when I was working corporate, I would always sort of hone in on who was the person not speaking. And sometimes it was a woman or a man. Like, who's not talking in the conversation? Who do we need to pull in and sort of bring them to the table? I remember when we used to have summer interns. This is a vivid memory. We'd have summer interns for a little while, and they'd always sit in the side. There'd be like a bunch of seats on the side of the boardroom when we'd have these big, you know, group huddles, and they'd never sit at the table. And, you know, they clearly didn't feel like they were senior enough. They were just interns. You know, they weren't part of the business. They were getting, you know, they were paid interns. They weren't, you know, but even if they weren't, you know, and I always sort of honed in on those people. And brought them in, you know, you deserve to be sitting as just as many as the rest of us. So So really, speaking with Podology applies everywhere, and it's really powerful, really important to be aware. And so many more examples. I mean, I can't even tell you, I'm sure you as well, Lisa, right? We could go on about all the different areas. I do want to ask you before we close here, because you're so plugged into, you know, the work that I do in Gutsy Leadership, as you know, intuition is a really important part of what I talk about. It's what I train on, I coach on. I believe that 90% of our success is not based on what we're doing on a day-to-day basis. I know doing is important, talking and writing and managing and knocking out those projects. They're all important, right? They're part of our day-to-day. That's not to say that they're not key, but I fundamentally believe that 90% of your success is really based on who you're being and also leading with your intuition. Intuition being the driver to who you want to be, to choosing, oh my God, should I say that or shouldn't I? I disagree with that person, but I'm going to lean in here in my instinct and chime in because I know at the end of this meeting, everyone nodding their heads yes is not a good thing for this project, and I need to really, mm-hmm. Stick my neck out. So intuition is a big deal for me. I believe if more people followed it, not that they have to drop the logic and the reasoning and the experience and the knowledge, but if they just lead and lean in more with their instinct, which is a very real thing, it's our sixth sense, then you will achieve more success in anything that you do. Leader, parent, partner, it doesn't matter. Can you share with us, one way in which you tap into and tune into your intuition and how it applies with your career?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the biggest thing that I have been trying to do is listen more than I speak, but when I speak, make sure that I am clearly communicating what I think and doing it in my natural voice. To go back to something you had referenced before, I would consider myself a natural extrovert. And so, which I know you mentioned in the previous podcast, a lot of your clients are more introverted. You may be more introverted yourself. I don't have any problem speaking, but I do need obviously to keep in mind these tricks to make sure that what I say is coming across authoritatively. So I would say listen more than I speak and listen to those, as you also mentioned, that may be not heard as much as others. I'm lucky enough to work for a company that does highly value diversity and inclusion and has provided unconscious bias training to a good chunk of the company, and hopefully we're working on expanding that to as many people as possible, because it is very important, as you said, to get all sorts of perspectives. And if folks are in the room but not being heard, then why are they even in the room to begin with? And then when it comes to using your natural voice, that was something that took me a while to hone. I started off working for some leaders that tended to be on the strict and very firm side of things, kind of no nonsense, here's the plan and here's what we're doing, thanks for the work. And then I started working for a female leader at my company who had a very different approach, who was much more positive, much more engaging, much more, teamwork oriented, and had really positive feedback when there was good work being done, and could certainly drop the hammer when it wasn't being done, but really took the time to applaud good performance. And that really struck me because I had never before worked for a female leader who, who just used her natural voice in that way. And that was just her. And I have been really inspired by that to, certainly respect all different kinds of leadership, but recognize that my natural voice is typically a fairly colorful one. I'm a youngest child. I'm pretty extroverted. I pretty much tick most of the boxes about the stereotypical, youngest child. And so I, I'm a pretty, colorful person. I hope to think that I'm a pretty colorful leader as well. But I would say using your natural voice again and finding it and not being afraid of it, knowing how to wield it in a productive way, but not trying to smother it just because you feel like you need to fit in to the people that you're around. So for me, that can mean using a lot of exclamation marks in an email when I'm really proud of something or of someone, or whatever it is. So I would say For me, honing my intuition comes down to a lot of listening, but then being true to myself when I do speak.
The beingness, right? Beingness. Love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, I love that. And that really is the heart of what I like to call inside out leadership. Really, the self leadership happens when you're able to listen, and also listen to what's not being said, right? What people should be saying or want to say. You could kind of just intuitively know they're not really fully disclosing or maybe, you know, saying everything they want to share on their mind and just pulling it out. But we can't really tune in and tap into that, right? If we're not showing up as our true selves as a leader, then how do we expect our team to give themselves permission to show up authentically and genuinely, right, under your direction? So it really is this cascade ripple effect that really does grow organically once you show up as that genuine leader. So I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. I know that this has been, this podcast has given a ton of value for our listeners. And I just want to thank you. Thank you so much, Lisa, for sitting here with me today. If anyone has any questions at all, following this podcast, please reach out. I'm happy to respond and I'm sure Lisa will chime in. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
Lisa.
Thank you so much. This was fun.
All right. Yeah, no, I loved it. Yeah, really great. Thank you, everybody, and we will talk to you soon. Okay, bye now.